This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, folks. What a long night it was. Still some uncertainty about some of the election results as they continue to count votes and we continue to look at this very closely. However, the tailwinds are behind former President Donald Trump, obviously, and Kamala Harris, the vice president, is facing a number of headwinds in these states that are still yet to be determined. A number of news agencies have designated former President Trump as a newly elected 47th president of this country. And it's going to be interesting to see how this is ultimately going to play out. We heard a lot about a campaign that was going to bring people together, that was going to turn the page in so many different respects. And as we began to see the results coming in and the election unfolding last evening, I didn't get the sense that that was what was going on. Obviously, there's disappointment. Obviously, emotional intelligence was strained and put to the test last night. Mainstream media pundits, one saying that they were going to vomit. Others not knowing what to do with themselves and gone off the rails and just can't figure out what went wrong. It didn't seem like we were taking those steps to bring folks together. One individual said he feels sorry for those that are not part of anyone's elites, as if and though Democrats are the only ones that face that same situation. Not Republicans, obviously, and certainly not independents. Kind of odd. And then right away, the explanation has nothing to do with policy, positions. They knew where the public stood in this country on so many different issues, by vast majorities in some case. But still, this morning, what we talked about, in an attempt to bring this country together, a number of the pundits in mainstream media went right to the isms and said the only explanation could be the reason white women didn't show up for Kamala Harris, racism. The reason black men parted ways with Kamala Harris, sexism. It could only be that. It couldn't be the fact that this country really didn't think very favorably about the manner in which the Biden-Harris administration dealt with tuition debt. You know, we talked about threat to democracy. We tried to place fear in folks about whether or not he was going to be a threat to democracy. All we talked about was fear that Donald Trump was trying to gin up on the issues of immigration. Well, those were real, right? I mean, we saw it in living color, front and center, every day on the news. Democrats recognized it. They got rid of that mess and morass between the ports of entry, and it just simply created all kinds of exotic schemes to bring people into this country through the ports of entry. So no one could sit up there with a drone and segregate who is legal, illegal, citizen, non-citizen, or otherwise, because they were caught up in the masses of the ports of entry. Is it possible that the electorate caught on to what was happening and thought that that was kind of sinister? Is it possible that you were inching towards a threat to democracy to try and mislead intentionally the public? The border's safe. The border's secure. No problem there. What are you talking about with these numbers? These immigration exotic workarounds. Is that possibly viewed by some folks as maybe being a threat to democracy? I don't know. How about special voter registrations publicly financed in Democrat-controlled areas? Series of reports coming out in all of the departments in the federal government in participating in one way, shape, or form to try and stimulate voter registration on college campuses and other areas that are historically favorable to left-leaning candidates, predominantly Democrats. Another exotic way, is that a threat to democracy? Knowingly and intentionally using public funds to benefit that candidate by increasing registration and only spending those dollars in Democrat-controlled areas. Questionable. Wonder. You think the public may have caught on? How about the complete and total destruction of Title IX? Couldn't have been that, right? How could that be? That's not a legitimate issue. We spent day after day after day after day hearing about women's rights relative to the issue of abortion. Well, what happened to Title IX? Do you think that just maybe there's a small sector of the population that has the ability to mentally absorb the hypocrisy, the duality of what's being presented by this administration? Just maybe? Of course not. It could only be the isms, racism and sexism, right? How about the DEI-sponsored discrimination? In order to have equity, we need to discriminate against somebody. Do you think that just maybe the public caught on to what was happening and they weren't happy about it? Do you think maybe they had situations within their own families that caused them some concern about this approach as their kids were trying to get into universities and otherwise, and it had nothing to do with their accomplishments? It went by the wayside. Do you think maybe there were just some folks that caught on to that and said, I don't know what this is all about, but I don't know that engaging in discrimination is where we want to be relative to the promotion of DEI? How about standing in between parents and their kids? When in our history has that ever been a smart political strategy or a good legislative strategy anywhere? Can you remember one? As a parent, I don't know about you, but I find it incredibly offensive. Others know what's better for my kids than I know, right? I'm the one that's been responsible for setting the moral compass of my children each and every day, even post-majority. It doesn't go away as the obligation of parents. Do you think just maybe there's a sector of the population that said, I don't think that's a good idea? I'm the one that's investing the time each and every day, second after second, minute after minute, hour after hour, day after day, month after month, and year after year. And all of a sudden, there's a paradigm shift where someone's going to come in and say, you don't know what's in the best interest of your kids. And because you don't know that, we're going to stand in the way of you being able to parent your children. In fact, we will empower your children to be able to tell you what they want, when they want, how they want, because you simply don't know. Is it possible that just maybe that turned people off? I don't know. You tell me. How about funding discriminatory exotic grant programs? that we read about and releases about this and that and folks sitting back saying, interesting. We've got more grant programs that are coming down the pipe for folks that have crossed the border illegally in the manner in which we spend in that. And we have 40-some-odd million people living below the federally identified poverty level in the country. We've done an abysmal job in trying to deal with that. We're willing to bring in more lower socioeconomic group members, increasing those numbers, and we already suck at providing for them. And in the meanwhile, we're spending billions upon billions of taxpayer dollars in promotion of same. And I just wonder whether or not the average American citizen fully embraces and understands new math, whether or not they get this. I think we sell the public short because we jumped right to the isms. It had to be sexism, and it has to be racism. Those can be the only two reasons why the turnout turned out the way it turned out last evening. And how about finally, and there's so many more, I mean, I've got about 40 items listed here, but we don't have the time, mandates without an operational plan. When you look at these EV mandates that are being shoved down our throats day in and day out, we hadn't figured out how we're going to produce batteries in this country. We've given all kinds of incentives to purchase EVs. We've engaged in incredibly short timelines with these EV mandates. We don't know how we're going to deal with battery disposal. Hell, in our city here, we can't deal with the disposal of a tire. But yet we're off and running. We're trying to set up charging stations across the country, and there's less than 100 that have been completed. We wonder about the execution. We wonder about whether or not there's a legitimate plan out there. All the while, those folks in China are trying to reduce their utility costs by going to coal-fired production. And meanwhile, we're going to make the poor poorer. The working man poorer by having to swallow these mandates that it just seems like there wasn't much thought put into it. Other than it was the topic of the day, it was the feel-good issue of the day, and we just had to do it for the sake of doing it. Did you ever wonder whether or not the public is capable of consuming it and understanding it? I've covered a lot of issues, and I tried not to get into the personalities. And I'm one that said that the Republican Party should have put Trump in the rearview mirror on January 7th. So I've made my position perfectly clear. But I resent the fact that the morning after, the only explanation that these left-leaning, progressive political pundits in the mainstream media cannot help themselves. Of course, these are the folks that constantly talk about bringing the country together, about threats to democracy, divisiveness, toxicity, and everything else. And the only place they can go to this morning is, you got it, racism and sexism. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. Give us a shout. Text us on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line at 504-260-1870. We're joined by Joe Geruso, City Council member, District A. There were some amendments on the ballot last evening for dealing with the city, and he joins us to talk about that, the budget, and the Wisner Trust. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Noel.
So, Joe, let's jump right into the housing amendment. It passed. Your thoughts?
I was a little surprised by the margin by which it passed, Noel, and I kind of always dig into the numbers in District A to see what's going on. And candidly, I was surprised in the lakefront, which has oftentimes voted against millages and other things that are related to revenue, where the lakefront did not overwhelmingly vote against it. Which to me means a couple of things. That number one, there had to be a lot of people who said this is not a new tax and we support it, and that people felt comfortable enough with the way that this had been articulated to put it into the charter. So I think those are always major drivers when you're looking to do something. And the fact that, again, it did not pass in the lakefront, but it was not overwhelmingly defeated, like I've seen, for example, the sheriff's millage and the millage on early childhood education. So I think that messaging really must have resonated with people. And the other charter change on the workers' bill of rights, I was not surprised by that sort of at all. I kind of thought that sort of saying that people deserve dignity in their work and working for the city is important and making sure that we treat workers and contractors well was not really a surprise. And then, Newell, like, I will admit I am not a political scientist, but I also think if people are going into the booth and they feel good about two maybe of the measures, I think obviously the constitutional amendment passed overwhelmingly, the Bill of Rights passed overwhelmingly, then it's easier to be in a yes position on all three. So that's kind of what I think would happen, and I give people credit for working hard and having their messaging in place for those items.
What does the Bill of Rights actually do, though? Does it really do anything?
I mean, I other than the answer is other than really say what I just said, which is the value. No, it doesn't really have a hard thing to do. So I think that also made it easier for people to say, well, okay, like, this is fine. And look, I think ultimately people say, if I can vote for something that either does not seem harmful or doesn't hurt anything, then yes. And I understand that this doesn't have a lot of punch of power or force of law other than sort of putting into the charter where that is, but it's not something that is going to be super expensive or really expensive much at all.
So let's shift and pivot to the budget process. Where do we find ourselves?
Well, we're at the critical point. As I tell people all the time, we're kind of like trying to land the plane right now. And in a way, this is sort of the hardest part of the whole flight. We've had takeoff, there's been negotiations, and I would say I think between 80 to 90% of the budget people mostly agree on internally and externally. It's always sort of at the edges that becomes a little bit harder because that's where there's either disagreement and or it's a balancing of priorities. I think the major thing the council feels like, and that was demonstrated throughout the budget hearings, is that there are certain departments, such as Department of Public Works, Safety and Permits, and Property Management, that just don't have enough employees. And we can't expect the city to provide quality of life for people without having the requisite number of people there. And so there's going to be a push to get that done. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again tonight as we have our first budget meeting at Warren Eason for districts A and B, you got to be careful with the numbers, and you know this. Safety and permits on paper looks like it has more employees, and it does, but that's because there's been a shift of the healthy homes employees from another department into that one. Well, that's good, but it doesn't account for the fact that we have significantly fewer inspectors for electrical and maintenance and buildings. And so we need to put focus there too. So I think it's a long way of saying the people factor is incredibly big. And then obviously all the district council members are going to have asks, you know, either that are philosophical that they care about, but usually they tend to be more of the practical kind, like, I have this huge blight issue. I want you to help me with this. There's a path in my district that isn't connected. How do we get that taken care of in District A, in addition to the litany of ongoing infrastructure issues? Harrison Avenue is awful between Canal Boulevard and Orleans. That needs to be fixed pronto. So it's sort of elevating those things that district council members know in their districts are a problem, in addition to the writ large ones.
Joe, is there much of an appetite at the present time to think about right-sizing city government? I mean, I know we have a lot of pieces and parts that are scattered around, and have we ever thought about, you know, working on a table of organization, figuring out the numbers that we need to appropriately staff so that we have some goal to work towards? It seems like this is a series of shifting sands all the time.
Yeah, I think, listen, you and I have talked about this a number of times. I think there's two different things that are happening. Number one is there aren't enough people at some of the lower level jobs, and we absolutely have to have more people who can do certain types of work. I'll give you one example. The city had 4 vacuum trucks to clean catch basins, but did not have people who could man those trucks to do the work, or not enough people to do the work. And that's going to Sewage and Water Board, and they will hire people to do that, but that's not the way to operate a business. On the flip side, two things. One, Councilmember Thomas raised this point that technology has changed, and we need to adapt to having that do certain things that you may not need other people to do. And secondly, I would prefer to pay one person maybe 30% more than have 3 people who all have the same job title and their work is split up, and maybe you don't have quite as competent people. So I think it's a little bit of all of the above, because, again, you have some departments to me that feel like they're starved of rank-and-file employees, and they desperately need that. And, again, Department of Public Works is the prime example. And then there's other places where, hey, we need to think about what this looks like, and do we need so many folks everywhere at the same time? And if we're paying people at those, I would say, middle-level, high-mid-level positions what they deserve to be paid, then do you need so many people doing those jobs?
You know, because as I look at the budget, I mean, it is heavily reliant on federal grants, federal dollars, state assistance, right?
I mean, we are. No, we have a little bit more than half of the budget is built on federal, non-city generated funds. Sorry.
So when I look at that, you know, I refer to that, and I know people get offended with it, but I call that the beggar's budget, the beggar mentality. Is there any concern as a result of last night's election, for example, if the Republicans control the presidency, the House, and the Senate, their philosophy is to look and try to deal with this federal debt structure that we have, and you know as well as I, the places you cut are the dollars that you begin to send down to the states, right? And the states, in turn, send it to local government. The Democrats historically have always been favorable of direct placement. That's kind of going to go away. The governor is going to have a lot of say-so in every federal dollar that comes down to this state. If I was sitting here in a Democrat city, I'd be really concerned.
I've had this conversation twice already this morning, Newell.
Yeah.
So I don't mean to cut you off, but you're right.
No, but I mean, I'm encouraged to hear it, because You can't wait for it to come to you. You got to prepare for it, right?
That's right. No, it's 100% right. Look, the reality is you're going to have a new president. You're definitely going to have a new Senate. You could have a new House. And so you know that that means there will be philosophical issues, both with certain things being funded and just the nature of cuts themselves. And so of those, you have to think about these are the ones that are most likely to be on the chopping block. And then within that, what are we doing to conserve money to deal with some of this? And we have a high fund balance right now, but of course you got it, as you and I have discussed many times, you don't want to use that for recurring costs. And then of the things that are being cut, and there will be cuts from the federal government, no doubt about that. What are the ones that are mission critical that we have to say, we're going to fill those gaps and flood the zone and just figure it out? And what are ones that we're just going to have to say, we can't do this? And either the return on impact can't be demonstrated, or this is so much more important that we have to pay attention to. We have to get this done. And that's going to be across the board when it comes to health and infrastructure and all of our departments. The smart department heads are asking themselves that question this morning.
Yeah, it's just kind of curious. I mean, I just kind of wonder how this is ultimately going to play out, because I think, you know, when we read the other day in the paper that we are talking about an electric vehicle mandate in the city of New Orleans, and we're off and running on this, and obviously I guess there's a desire that federal dollars were going to be coming our way, and that was going to help us get 40% of the vehicles registered in the city of New Orleans to be electric vehicles by, what was it, 2030, 2035. It's like, how much energy are we wasting on this? Because there's just so many other basic services and necessities that, you know, I guess are impacted by the fact that we're even thinking about this at this juncture.
Let's take the most basic, Noel, okay? This is the one that I think that everybody needs to be the most focused on. We have deadlines that are coming up with all of our FEMA-funded work that's here. And so for your listeners, mm-hmm. in my world, that means particularly the road work that's going on after Katrina, that Joint Infrastructure Recovery Program, and other things that have come in as a result of natural disasters. But there will come a point where potentially people will say, we've had enough giving the city money, or you've had your share, and that's it. And so the city, in my view, and this is kind of the way I operate, really kind of needs to have, this is a worst case scenario of cuts to these different departments. This is middle of the road, and maybe this is best case, and we're going to just make some very educated guesses. But as I said, I had a department head with whom I spoke this morning as we're preparing for the budget this year, who acknowledged that there will probably be grants, plural, that will not be renewed. And then what do you do about those employees? So the city has to figure that out. And look, you and I have also had this conversation many times over the years. I think residents, particularly in New Orleans, are frustrated with the cost of living has gone up, but the delivery of services has gone down. And so people just want to know, my sewage and water board bill is going to be correct. My pothole will be fixed in less than 400 days. My light's going to be changed. The grass is going to be cut. And I really think whoever, and I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but whoever the next mayor is going to be, if my political advice to them would be, it's the quality of life, stupid. And that's where I'd spend all my time talking if I were campaigning.
Yeah, I mean, I talk to folks, and it's funny, but, you know, they say, man, I sure wish they would pick up garbage twice a week again.
Yeah, like, you know, okay, so can we talk about that for 1 second?
Every surrounding parish does, but you know, we don't seem to be able to pull it together.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
You know, here's So, look, that's part of my budget presentation tonight is we have a number. We don't put all the departments in the presentation because people aren't going to ask me a lot of questions about mosquito control. But sanitation's in there, and I'm going to get close to the numbers. In 2021, before Ida, the city was running a $600,000 deficit in terms of the revenue we collected from the fee that's on your sewage and water board bill, and then how much we were being charged by the contractors. Well, that all exploded for a variety of different reasons, the sizing of the contracts, the labor market, new equipment, et cetera. I think now, and I'm going to have to look at my slide, we're somewhere between $25 to $30 million behind on an annual basis. So think about it, not $600,000 to $1 million or $2 million or $5 million, $25 million. So the city's going to have a hard conversation with residents, and this is something I told them a couple of years ago, which is if you know there's that big of a difference, you know there's that big of a gap, then there has to be a conversation of, all right, the fee has been $24 since 2012. That means we haven't changed it once in 12 years. What is it really going to be for once a week if you want to get to revenue neutral, because we shouldn't be making money on it? And then what does it look like for twice a week? And let people see the numbers and feel it and figure it out. But the bottom line is we have not raised the rate in a really long time. Other parishes have done it incrementally, and they're getting the benefit of that intangible as a result of moving the needle slowly so people see it. And I think people need to see in black and white what the difference is between 2021 and now 2024.
Well, I think there's a level of uncertainty that's out there that they feel, you know, as to the quality of service and execution. That coupled with the fact, and I hear this all the time, and don't sell the public short. And it was kind of what my monologue was about, you know, that we treat the voter sometimes as if they don't get it. There's an announcement almost every week out of the city of New Orleans that we have a grant program that we're giving away city dollars to some special interest group. You know, $2 million here, $3 million there, $5 million here, culture bearers there, this one over there, and everything else. And I say, well, wait a minute. If we can afford all of that, why are you asking me for an increase in garbage fees? You know, we're facing the increases in insurance. We're facing the increases in property taxes. We're facing all of these increases. Sewer fees had gone up. Now, you know, garbage fee. And we just simply asked for two times a week collection. But if we find ourselves that we can prioritize some of all of these other needs for people, but not sanitation, I think people think that there's something fundamentally upside down there. And I don't blame them. I mean, you know, and because there's a willingness to give money to everybody, you know, and it's like, well, what about us? You know, sanitation seems to be very, very important. Why can't there be a little juice and go back to here if it's 25 or 30 million? I think if you put that on the ballot, people are going to say, no, finance garbage. Forget about all that other stuff. Because every taxpaying citizen and every homeowner in this parish and every renter needs garbage picked up.
And trust me, having lived after Ida, an elected office when it wasn't being picked up, one of the low points because people were so frustrated and such, maybe one of the most essential basic services. I will say this. I think both things are true. At one point, you can't run government.
Let's do this, Joe. Let me get to a break. Let me get to a break, and we'll come back, and I'll give you some time to answer that question. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. 504-260-1870. We're visiting with Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council Member, District A. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council Member, District A. We were talking about priorities in the city. Joe, go ahead with your comments.
Yeah, all I was going to say is, Newell, I think both things are right. I think number one is you can't run government on flat fees forever and ever. Jefferson Parish raised their collection of trash services recently by a little over $10. At the same time, I also believe you can't just say we're going to throw money at something and solve it. sometimes it's about you need to have the right people running it, and you need to demand accountability. And look, I will also candidly say that I think sometimes we accept too much mediocrity and too many excuses for things when money isn't the issue. So it's that balance to me of I don't have enough people, I don't have enough resources to fill a pothole versus we're not holding people to account for making sure the light isn't being changed in 220 days or whatever the issue is. So I think you need both.
You know, it'd be interesting to see what would happen, Joe, if you adopted kind of the priority system of the state. You have your priority one projects and things that you need to finance, and you don't fund priority two until all the revenue's there for priority one. And you know,
I think you maintain
the focus on those critical things to the city.
I think that's right. And then look, Noel, we've talked about this before too. The city's bonding capacity increases in a major way. So it's opportunity, but opportunity only works when there's good planning and foresight ahead. So how do you take that planning one and put state and federal money right on top of it to supercharge it?
No doubt, for sure. Joe, as always, totally enjoy the conversation with you. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council Member, District A. Have a great rest of the week and weekend.
Same to you. Take care, Noel.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc. And at 12 o'clock, Ron Fauché joins us, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We'll do the after-action post-mortem on last night's election. So stay with us. We've got a lot still coming your way. This is Newell on WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.